The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Tom Clark, and this is Politics Weekly. Two conferences down, one to go, and Labour's quest for renewal continues. Ed Miliband identifies a quiet crisis in Middle Britain.
You know what your values are. You believe in looking out for each other. You believe we are stronger together, weaker on our own. But we have allowed values which say, take what you can. I'm in it for myself, to create a Britain that is too unequal.
But was he loud enough and intelligible enough in proposing a solution? Also this week, with the Conservatives preparing to descend on Manchester, what can we expect from the Tories after 2 weeks of insults from the podiums of their political enemies and their supposed allies? Here in the studio, we have our very own closed circle of influence, Guardian commentators Anne Perkins and Julian Glover, as well as The Observer's political editor, Toby Helm. A warm welcome to you all. Once a red, always a red, so they say at Liverpool Football Club. In the conference venue in the city's docks, however, there were other colours to choose from. Maurice Glassman's Blue Labour competed with what some are calling a Blairite purple book. But after what one columnist called the party's most radical leader's speech in a generation, the papers were daubing Miliband with only one colour. It was Red Ed once again. Now, Anne Perkins, the big distinction was producer versus predator in the speech. Good capitalism versus bad. Did it work for you? Did it mean anything?
What worked for me was his idea that the state has a moral purpose. And I thought that was a really big and important thought. And the sad thing was that they hadn't really begun to think it through. And so they ended up coming out with completely unsustainable ideas about how it would work in practice that everyone then did absolutely delighted in pulling to pieces. It's very difficult, isn't it, at this point? How do you get an idea out there? You know you're immediately going to be challenged about the practicalities of it, but you want to kind of get a debate and get people talking about it, and you want to feel you've got something that's new and interesting to say. I think he's caught in that awful black hole of early years opposition. And I think it's an idea full of potential, and I hope that the next few years will prove that it can be made to work.
And Julian, do you think? I think you said you didn't like the argument, but there was an argument.
Yes, I mean, there seem to be two responses. I agree with Anne on it, really. There's two responses to the speech. Some people said it was just fluffy and badly written and didn't really contain anything original and had lots of sentences in that David Cameron could have used. Other people, Anne and I think me, thought that it was quite clear what he was thinking, quite clear what he was trying to explain. For me, I disliked it. I didn't agree with the speech, but I thought it was good that he tried to give a philosophical speech. Lots of people are sort of asking him to stake out his values. He had a go at it. I don't think it worked. I think it was a shift to the left. I think it was an assertion that the Labour values of the left are the values of the country. That's a very big bet. You talk to shadow ministers and they say, well, look, you know, the centre ground is moving to the left. I don't know what the evidence they have for this is. I suspect the implications of the crash are actually people are moving into the right. They're less generous to other people. They're more concerned about protecting their immediate property. One of the surprises of the conference was that the speech on the police by Yvette Cooper was regarded as the big moment of the conference. I think that suggests the ground is moving to the right, not to the left. So I think Ed Miliband's going the wrong way, but I think we've got to give him some marks for trying to at least set out some explanation rather than just attacking the government, which is what opposition leaders do in default mode.
And Toby, did it work for you?
Partially, I think. I thought it was a very engaging speech. I agree with everything that's been said so far. That the argument was a good one. It desperately needed a couple of announcements that were credible to hang on it, I felt, because the news people, the TV people, the radio people came out thinking, God, what's my top line on this story? What's my top line on this speech? What am I going to say? I can't talk about new moral values or new bargain for Britain. These are just phrases that lead to millions of people switching channels. But I think what I do think about it is that Ed Miliband has a problem in terms of the public. People don't yet think he's a prime minister. Now, what his only way out of all this is to be brave and quite radical and quite distinct. And he took the decision to be that. So he came up with a big argument. Now, the argument may have failed on one level, but on another level, he will be thought of now as somebody who's prepared to say what he thinks. He's prepared to give it a go. And that may, in the end, may gradually register with the public.
I agree with that to a point, but it didn't seem to work with the party. I didn't get the sense at conference that everybody loved it. And if he sets out his values and his moral case for government and he can't even win over the shadow cabinet, you do worry about the country.
Well, he's got to deal with that problem in his own party. That's up to him to deal with it. If he's going to go for this, he's got to get the people behind him who will back him. He's also got to come up with decent ideas. But I think it is his only chance.
He seems to me he suffered from two immediate responses, and arguably it's because his delivery is so weak, and it was not, by all accounts, a very well constructed speech. But it was being monstered immediately afterwards. Monstered.
Some of our columnists in The Guardian said the press all got together and ganged up on him. It can't just be the press's fault.
And then the second thing is that, he doesn't have enough people close behind him standing up for him and articulating his case. It's very noticeable that, the case in the magazines is all being made by academics, by people in think tanks. Mm. It's not people involved in practice.
There's absolutely no doubt he's got to broaden out his circle of backers. He did. That speech looked to me like it was a speech cobbled together late at night. And the ideas were, the ideas have been cooking for some time, but the kind of way it was presented was cobbled together late at night without any kind of preparation across the party. And, even the spin doctors who were trying to brief it beforehand didn't really know what it meant, didn't really know what the detail meant. And then afterwards they weren't there to say what it meant. And it looked like massive lack of experience in this immediate team, and he's got to deal with that.
But they spent months working on it, and there's clever people working on it, and that's the saddest. It wasn't cobbled together late at night. Yeah. This is supposed to be the product.
I know the idea.
Patrick Winter called it the sort of rolling summer festival in his office.
I know the central idea has been there for ages, and he's been terribly confident about it for ages. But where the inexperience came in was in not kind of preparing the party for it, not preparing the wider,
and just
business community slightly for it. He should have been onto the editor of the FT flatteringly saying, this is what's coming, got any thoughts, and win people's trust a bit and prepare the ground a bit.
It's interesting that lots of the territory he got into, because I certainly think it's sort of there is a kind of potentially rich terrain there about industrial policy and so on. Much of it quite similar to what Vince Cable was talking about, where he was no more specific. But when you're the leader, I guess, there is an expectation that there'll be a different depth of briefing to follow. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I do. I actually think a lot of the ideas, not the industrial ones, not the business ones, but the broad idea of responsibility, it's actually what Cameron was groping at for the last 5 years and unable to explain. Ned Miliband actually did it a damn sight better than Cameron did.
So why...
But the difficulty was, I think, was that it really annoyed the Blairites and the right and the business community because they didn't do the business stuff cleverly enough.
Yes, and the trouble with the responsibility, I agree, and it is in some ways Cameron territory, and it ought to be Cameron territory next week, and we can talk about that. But the trouble was it did end up sounding like business is bad, the markets are evil, we have to have the state, because if we don't have the state telling us what's good, then God knows what will happen. And that is just sliding right back to where Labour was wrong in the past.
And I think there are ways in which the state can influence the climate, and that's what it does all the time. I don't think it's a particularly weird thing to propose, but it was that heckle really kind of set the tone.
The Blair heckle.
And if Miliband had been swifter on his feet, he could have used that as an opportunity to say, no, that's wrong. Blair did many great things, but times are different now. He could have.
But it's what he did kind of do, but he just didn't do it with.
Well, he did it yesterday.
I thought on the Today interview he did afterwards, in the morning afterwards, he made a point which I didn't really see in the speech, which was a good one, which is nobody on the right or the left objects to using the benefits system to try and shape society and behaviour of the people who receive the money, and that the model for his argument for business is exactly the same as that. He's not saying business is bad. He's just saying the rules shape how they behave. We think it's okay for welfare benefit. We should do the same for banks. He didn't quite get that clear across in the speech.
The new Labour project took 10 years before it really got its first full, serious examination. The new Miliband project is almost preconception. It's in its such early stages. And the question is whether he's going to have the time.
But there is, isn't, I mean, there is just a sort of political cycle point, isn't there, Julian? I mean, the fuzziness of Cameron's early days was kind of forgiven because there was a mood in the country. They were in for a long time. It was introspective. Blair was fighting Brown. People wanted to hear something new and believe in something new from somewhere new. And maybe now Miliband's equally fuzzy and that's harder to cut through with that.
That's probably true. And it was always easier when there was lots of money because everybody deleted the economy from the discussion of politics for a decade and a half. And now we have to go back to talking about the economy. So when he talks about business, it really matters. It's not just a nice thing because we know there's going to be growth anyway. But in terms of Miliband in particular, his problem is not the same as the Labour Party's problem. Labour is doing okay in the polls. Some ICM comrades have had the Tories narrowly ahead, but in the poll that got all the attention at the Labour conference, the Tory party's share actually went down, even though they pulled into the lead. It's a problem for Miliband that his polling ratings and Ed Balls' polling ratings are uniquely bad. So were the leader doing as well as the party, a lot of this discussion wouldn't be happening. We'd be saying Labour's looking pretty strong. There seems to be a disconnect between the public and the leader, which will in the end weaken the party as election gets closer, unless he can change it round, and it's very hard to do. And sometimes these things happen straight away, and it sounds incredibly sort of anti-politics. So there's nothing you can do. Cameron, at the start, the public looked at him and thought, God knows what you're talking about, but I like you. They looked at Miliband and thought, maybe I do like what you're talking about, but I'm not going
to
listen.
It's true to say that it's very difficult to turn things around, but the one exception to that actually was Brown himself, whose popularity oscillated quite wildly. If you remember kind of when he became Prime Minister, he was actually for a time incredibly popular, and you know, the banking crisis, he was quite popular. I don't think he's a hopeless cause in terms of popularity. He's not Ian Duncan Smith, who just looked wildly out of position there and out of his depth and kind of knew it. Ed Miliband has a determination about him, which is quite impressive, and I don't think it's hopeless.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and the speech, I mean, it feels a bit more substantial, I think, the day after rather than on the day, which is a good. But Julian mentioned Ed Balls there, and let's just listen to a little clip from his speech, because I think there's a really fascinating contrast between the two.
Action on jobs, investment brought forward, support for families, support for homeowners, support for small businesses, five immediate steps the government could take tomorrow. If they do so, we will back them. Call it Plan A, call it Plan B, call it Plan C. I don't care what they call it. Britain just needs a plan that works.
Now, listening to that, Ed Balls kind of tub-thumping speech centering on his demand for a cut in VAT. Do you think there could be a deliberate attempt on his part to offer a bit of bread and butter in terms of what some might think of as Ed Miliband's pie in the sky?
I think probably it was much more that he had to have something. He had to have something sensible, positive, and credible to say on the state of the economy, and he was trying to begin to answer critics like Julian, who say, you know, where is his alternative? Why isn't he explaining exactly what Labour would be doing if it was in government?
I think he was trying something more short-term than that. I think he was trying to spike the Tories' guns ahead of their conference next week. He wanted to get the banks and the sell-off of the banks, a long way off since they're not worth anything like we paid for them, but the sell-off into the banks, into the sort of Labour territory of let's pay off the deficit. He wants to look responsible on that. He wants to challenge the Tories on VAT. So he wants to really make it a bit tricky for Osborne. When he announced national insurance contributions should fall for some employers, that's a kind of Tory idea, that things the government is doing. He wants to try and block various routes that Osborne could do to talk about growth, and then that hopefully for him would expose the lack of a growth strategy from the government.
They both think quite similarly, don't they, Osborne and Balls, in these kind of ways, just very political in terms of how they think about the tax.
Yeah, that's what everyone says, and it's probably true.
Yeah. Toby, I mean, do you think you could get trouble ahead with the two Eds, or do you think actually this is a bit of yin and yang here?
Definitely think you could, but I think Ed Miliband has thought this. He must have thought this one through, and I mean, in answer to your question, you know, was there a deliberate bit of, you know, meat there from him, which was a challenge to Ed? I mean, I don't think so, but what I do think is that Ed Miliband has handed Ed Balls the economic portfolio. That's the deal. You know, I speak on the economy, says Ed Balls, and you leave that to me so he can do the big stuff. And there was actually quite an absence of big, broad economic strategy thinking in Ed Miliband's speech. and it was all there in Bolton. So I think it's just that Ed has got that portfolio and he's doing what he wants. And there's a similarity there with Blair and Brown, you know.
Just
Brown forced Blair to give him the economic portfolio.
Point of clarity, do we think that at the end of the Labour conference, Labour's programme for the deficit is the Alistair Darling programme, the Alistair Darling minus programme that Ed Bulls wants, or the Alistair Darling plus programme that Tony Blair and David Miliband want? Because I still couldn't work it out. They seem to have backed all three at different points in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's hugely clear, but I think Bulls is pretty, as people would have said, unassailable at this point.
I mean, I think their point is that they're in opposition, they're not laying it down, and so they don't have to decide now, but what they need to do is give a clear signal, which is that they'll cut a bit slower than the Conservatives. I think that's, I kind of think that came across.
But then, of course, you know,
the half listening public.
The deceit of that is, of course, that they say they won't guarantee to reverse any of the cuts the government's doing while not supporting any of the cuts the government's doing.
Yeah.
I think the argument, though, that you know, you don't get growth unless you, to some extent, pump prime in bad times is a simple and easy to grasp on, but somehow the public hasn't quite grasped it yet.
Widely supported in the media and not amongst the electorate.
No.
And that is a problem that Ed Bulls can't get it across.
Aside from the two Eds, there are other performers. One who has been singled out oddly is because she was talking about policing, which is not normally a Labour rousing subject, is Mrs. Bulls, Yvette Cooper. Is any of her stars catch your eye this week?
Yvette's definitely the coming woman, the coming alternative Labour leader, and there's all sorts of interesting thoughts about how she and her husband might negotiate that, should a challenge appear to be a desirable thing to launch.
And she was blushing last night when asked by Andrew Neil on television, you know, have you got a kind of Granita-style deal with your hubby? She couldn't quite say no.
And, She it was an open secret that she didn't run last time because she didn't think the party was going to win and she didn't think it was worth the sacrifice with small children. I mean, she's undoubtedly ambitious and good for her. And she is. She is a very effective communicator, which is a very important thing. I think she's completely wrong on the police, but she is a good and an effective communicator. And so she was in government, particularly, I thought, in the Treasury.
Well, next week, the gruesome roadshow rolls on and we move to Manchester for the Conservative Party conference. Well, Julian, more than a year into office and holding their own, I'd say, in the opinion polls, do you think champagne will be back on the menu this year?
Only in private. And there's quite a lot to worry about. And one of them is the economy, of course. And the government needs to look like it understands the nation's pain. It's got some plan to get it out of pain. And it can do that without blowing all of its own plans. And those three things are probably impossible. I think the other problem ahead is Europe. The Conservative Party is instinctively Eurosceptic, as we know. David Cameron certainly is. And the European Union has fallen to pieces and now is proposing a completely anti-democratic programme to impose a federal Europe on parts of Europe. This is the ultimate circumstances in which Euroscepticism seems to be a valid argument. And they will demand that from the Conservative Party. And they won't get it fully because the Liberal Democrats don't want it. And Nick Clegg's flown off today, I think, to go and talk to bits of Europe about you know, don't leave us out. If you form a Eurozone federal government, I can't see that happening in the end. But if it did happen, you know, we still want the benefits of European Union membership, because if we don't get the benefits, if we're beginning to be excluded, we will have a referendum and we will leave. And David Cameron has got to work out what he's going to say on that. He must be thinking about it now, and I don't know what it is he can say.
And do you think, is he vulnerable? You're saying to the Lib Dems pulling the plug, or ultimately to having to go along, like Osborne's banging the heads of the Eurozone together and or presenting himself that way, saying, you know, go and sort it out, do a deal and we'll back you but not give you any money sort of thing. Do you think that if in the end the only deal that can be done involves Britain underwriting some more of it, the real threat could come from a Tory right rather than the Lib Dems?
I don't think in the short term on bailouts. I mean, the government put through money into the IMF through Parliament this year, which the Labour Party, of course, voted against, and then attacked the government for not taking part in the IMF. But there we are. That's opposition for you. No, I don't think the problem is at the short term sort of let's fix this thing. I mean, the Tory right doesn't want the economy to collapse any more than anyone else. The longer term thing is just, look, that Europe lot has all gone wrong. Britain's better off out. And that will grow. And there'll be pressure discussed probably more on the fringes than from the platform at this conference. But the pressure over the next few years will be for the Conservative Party to advocate withdrawal in its manifesto at the next election, or at least a referendum. And if they advocate a referendum, then the Lib Dems make a fuss. They can point out that it was in the Lib Dem manifesto at the last election.
And it's just going to exacerbate the other running tension through next week, which is about what the role of the Lib Dems is in the government and how far it's stopping true Tory policies, appearing on the... The whole range. And I think it's an absolute touch point, isn't it? If the Lib Dems are publicly getting in the way of Tory instincts on Europe, then...
And this, it's again that sort of polling difference between party and voters that Labour experiences, is that Tory voters are, by and large, they're very impressed with Cameron. He gets good ratings from Tory supporters, much better than Miliband gets from Labour supporters. So he doesn't face a crisis of the wider party, but he does face a need to show he's a Tory prime minister, or to choose to do the opposite and show he's a coalition prime minister and say to the party, oi, you know, quiet, I'm in charge. But he's got to make that decision.
Toby, do you think there could be a particular flashpoint around this issue of a referendum? I picked up that Treasury officials are now working very, very hard to insist that any new treaty that organises a sustainable bailout won't trigger this instant referendum that was in the Conservative manifesto and the coalition agreement. Aren't people at conference this week going to be saying any change, any new deal, any new sovereignty swap, absolutely
not a referendum? They are, and in the original Tory manifesto before the election, there was stuff about repatriating powers. So the Tory right were given this chunk of meat about, you know, when we get in, we'll push for repatriation of powers. Now, in the deal with the Lib Dems post-election, that was quietly dropped. Now it's all the European issues have come back with the failure of the euro, the new architecture of Europe that's being created. And what they're saying is, you know, whatever that new architecture is, there will be pressure to suck us into the agreements that are made between the euro core. Now, that's where the pressure for a referendum comes from. Anything that will affect us in the new Europe, we must have a referendum on. And that's what the Tory right will go for. And Cameron and even Hague now, who's sort of more sympathetic on the European question or more moderate, will be under massive pressure to grant that. I think it's an absolutely critical moment for them, because Cameron's big game now is to stay on the middle ground of politics. You know, Miliband is weak. He is a respected leader. If he can keep his party centrist and not sort of looking like it's tacking to the right, he's pretty damn safe. If, on the other hand, he's seen to be going right, not only does that become unpopular, but it then risks splitting the Lib Dems, and then you run
and he
into
knows
trouble.
That, and he wants to stick on the centre. But so there will be, you know, we will go around conference, and we'll lots of people at fringe meetings denouncing him, and so then it might be much more interesting than we've seen at either of the other two fringe conferences.
It always has been. It's sort of since the 90s. It's been the subject which makes Tories' blood boil more than any other.
And we always said it was irrelevant, and it turned out
it's never irrelevant. It never stays irrelevant.
It used to get mocked as this dotty Tory party that talked about Europe, and it turned out it was right.
And so that's the big picture politics. If they can hold their ground on Europe, maybe they're very well placed. But on policy, it looks a bit of a different story, doesn't it? You've got wars over planning, you've got chaos on the NHS, you've even got reports now that the Sainted Ian Duncan Smith's universal credit might crank up a couple of years late. Do you think there'll be flashpoints on that stuff?
I think planning, I can't see that that's one's going not going to cause a row, but at the same time, I can't, you know, that all those things are things now beyond the party's control, but that doesn't mean there isn't going to be a great deal of feeling about all three. And the planning is obviously the most neuralgic issue for the Tories, and the idea that the Tories are up for it out in the shires. And I mean, I slightly question with Julian whether the rank and file Tories really are that keen on Cameron. I think there's...
Electorate, Tory voters.
Yes, voters rather than supporters, yes. I think, you know, hardcore Tories find Cameron quite hard to swallow on quite a lot of things.
I agree, but there's not many of them. He needs the voters.
And what about themes? I mean, do you think he'll be, Toby, take him a chance to go on the sort of responsibility stuff he was talking about pre-credit crunch, because he can use the riots as a way of getting into that?
Do you know what I suspect is going to happen? And it'll be very interesting, actually. Whilst Ed Miliband adopts his big theme, I think you might see Cameron gently dropping his big theme, or relegating it anyway. So
Big Society.
Big Society flop, doesn't go down well at conference. He tried it on last year. It was the only theme in his conference.
Times.
And he's under a lot of pressure to drop that now. I think you might see one mention of his speech, I reckon, but I think you could see him just going for specifics and hard-edged rhetoric on subjects that people want to hear about. Quit the woolly stuff, because it's, you know, it's done its job in a sense with Cameron, because it's branded him as not a right winger, as sensitive and da 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 da. But it's not got any purpose for him anymore.
In a way, at moments like this, particularly given the concluding feeling about Miliband's week, it must be very much an occasion for Cameron to hit Gordon Brown's old line, you know, no time for a novice, you know.
Yeah.
And particularly since their own competence is going to be, you know, severely...
They haven't thought of that already, they'll know now.
...compromised by, you know, the unravelling of their various over-ambitious and ill-thought through
reforms.
We may
see the conference obliterated from the news anyway by some European crisis in which, you know, a helicopter has to descend and whisk George Osborne away.
Yeah.
To,
or Miliband's reshuffle.
Yes, we didn't get onto that, did we?
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks very much to Anne Perkins, to Toby Helm and to Julian Glover. The producer, and not the predator, was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark. We will be back next week, although probably on the Friday rather than the Thursday after the Conservative Conference. Thanks very much for listening and goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.